Welcome to Really You, a podcast about wearing your voice well, brought to you by Reitmans. I'm your host, Chris Bergeron. In this episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Michelle South. To many Canadians, Michelle South is the embodiment of persistence and courage. After losing her right leg in a life-threatening accident, she chose to see opportunity in her tragedy. She became the first female Canadian Paralympic snowboarder. She's been on the podium of 14 World Cups. Michelle inspires others by sharing her story and showing that a difficult moment doesn't have to define a person forever.
Thank you, Michelle, for joining us for this podcast. So you've co-created a t-shirt with Reitmans, and maybe as a first question, I'd love it if you could describe the t-shirt first.
Yeah, so the t-shirt actually was inspired by a drawing I did on the TV show Canada's Smartest Person. Okay. It was an abstract, and the theme was passion. Mm-hmm. And so right away, I just went to life because of everything that's happened. Yeah. And my accident, my out-of-body experience. So it went, the heartbeat was essentially flatlined to brighter colors, giving that whole, death to come back to life aspect. And so I really wanted to stick with that heartbeat, with that EKG, because for me, it's tattooed on my wrist. Yeah. And it's my lifeline, right? And at one point in time, that stopped and I was able to come to, and here I am today. So the t-shirt is just a mix of vibrant colors, jungle theme almost, and then of course the heart with the EKG inside of it. I love it, it's beautiful.
And your t-shirt is tied into a cause as well.
Yeah, so the organization that I picked is one that's really close to me. It's called Classroom Champion. Steve Messler was the one who started it. He's an American bobsleigh athlete, gold medalist from 2010. And he was going into these schools, doing talks, and then leaving without seeing the impact. And so he decided to pair up classrooms with Olympians and Paralympians. And so every month we get to talk about different things and teach these kids life skills, not just skills to get them through school, but skills that they'll hopefully, and lessons that they'll hopefully take with them, you know, for years on and into their adult lives. And it's pretty cool. There's different topics such as community. So they are challenged to do something within their community and give back. And then, kindness. What can you do to be kind to your classmates and the people outside of school, as well as, teamwork and goal setting. So it just, for me, I didn't have that growing up, and I really wish that I did, because I probably would have been more prepared and equipped to, move on to middle school and even to high school and my adult life. So it's an organization that I mentored with for 4 years, and I truly believe in it.
And mentorship is huge in the developing of a person.
Right.
And in a sense, after your accident, I guess you were, as you said, with the introduction about the t-shirt, reborn in a way. Did you have a mentor that helped you through that difficult period in time?
I wouldn't say that I necessarily had one mentor, but everyone played a role. From Greg Westlake, he's the captain of the Canadian sledge hockey or para ice hockey team. He came to see me in the hospital and he's like, this is what I think you should do. Go on the Paralympic website, pick a sport, and just put your focus into that sport. So Greg was the initial contact and mentor. And then from there, it was, the incredible coaches that I had that believed in me when people said, this is impossible. You're not going to be able to do this, to get to the Paralympics in such a short time. And from there, going from 2014 to the 2018 games, I had incredible athletes like Kaylee Humphreys that would sit down with me and be like, it's tough, but this is what I do. So it's been just full circle. Everyone that has that I looked up to beforehand that's really come through and been able to help me through the journey to be where I am today.
What is that like, that decision, that choice, that moment when you say it's going to be snowboarding and I'm going to do this? How does that feel?
So for me, that moment came much, much quicker than anybody thought it would. I was on life support for 7 days. And when the respirators came out, I had one of my doctors come in, and just my older sister was in the room. And he starts telling me about his neighbor and how he's missing two legs, and he drives and he goes to university. And I'm looking at this doctor and I'm confused. I'm like, why are you telling me this story? I don't get it. And so he walked away, realizing that I hadn't remembered anything. Even though I was in an induced coma, I guess I was in and out of it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't remember going in for my amputation surgery. So he walks away, brings my sister in. My sister asks the nurse if she can maybe give me more morphine to put me out. So I didn't remember that moment, mm-hmm. you know. And then eventually she broke the news to me that I had lost my leg quite high above the knee. So I took some time to process that. And within those 7 days, my family was by my side holding my hand, telling me that I was going to do big things with my life, and they fueled this fire inside of me. So when I found out about the leg, of course I cried, and there was a lot of what ifs and what's my life going to look like, and what if I didn't get on my motorcycle that day? But just like that, I think someone had in the room had mentioned, oh, the Paralympics. I'm like, yeah, the Paralympics, that's it. I'm going to the Paralympics. And everyone's like, okay, you're really medicated right now. We're going to come back to this. I'm like, no, that's what I want to do. And I love snowboarding. So I'm going to get on my snowboard and I'm going to go to the Paralympics. And I think at the time it was just more, everyone saw it as more of a goal to get me healthy and, back on 2 feet. But I never let go of that goal, lost sight of that goal. It was always there. Every day when I woke up, it was there.
Was it that at the beginning, though, in a sense?
It was.
A bit of a crazy goal. I mean, were you convinced that you were actually going to make it, or was
always.
It always?
Always. It was never. Of course, there was moments throughout the journey that I doubted it.
Yeah.
Like when I hit a tree 3 months before the 2014 Paralympics and completely dislocated my knee and was told that I wasn't going. That was it. It was all about the Paralympics. It was all about making the most of my terrible situation. And I never for a moment let myself waver from that. Mm-hmm. Again, I questioned it at certain times, like, maybe is this too soon? Should I just focus on the next Paralympics? There's a lot of people that continue to say, I don't think you can do this. It's only 2.5 years after your accident when you broke everything.
Yeah.
You're not ready. Yeah. Mentally, physically, you're not ready. But I was on a mission.
Where did you find that confidence? So, I mean, yes, within yourself, are there people around you and your family? Or is it something that somebody inherits?
So it's interesting because I'm not going to take away from my family being incredible. They were there when I needed them, but I've never had a close relationship with most of my family.
Right.
So they wrote this ICU journal, and in it, my brother talked about me having one of those fancy running legs and winning medals for my country. Yeah. And so it was cool because they had this vision, and even though we weren't close, within this journal were these letters saying that I was the strongest person in the family, and I never thought they felt that way about me. So they saw it, and all of a sudden, I saw it. My journey didn't start at my accident. It started so much earlier than that, from being bullied in school to being divorced at 24 and, an addiction that could have sent me down a wrong path. And I always thought, okay, I'm weak. I dropped out of high school. I got addicted to a very strong drug. I'm not strong mm-hmm. at all. And then all of a sudden in that moment when I'm given the decision, the choice to survive, it was like all that strength I was failing to see came to light. Mm-hmm. And from there on in, I was this strong, resilient person that I always failed to see.
And you recognize that because there's a lot of people that go through traumatic events or make hard decisions, and people around them tell them that they're courageous, and they don't necessarily believe it. It's one thing to show courage, but to actually be convinced yourself, that's probably the biggest battle in a sense, to say, this is what I am.
Yeah, it's hard to recognize that because you, in some ways, feel like it's almost wrong to have that kind of confidence because that's bragging or, you know, that's being egotistical. I think sometimes that's the society we live in. It's that you have to hide how proud you are. And I'll have people come up to me often saying, oh, you're such an inspiration and you're so brave. And yes, it is tough hearing that because I don't necessarily, like I had to convince myself of that. People would tell that to me often and just in one ear and out the other. But I think for me, it was recognizing, like looking back at my journey as an athlete and be like, wow, I did this. I got through this. And those moments where I go and visit my medics and my firefighters on my scene, and they tell me that I was in the worst shape they've ever seen somebody that survived. And I'm like, I got through that. So it's just, it's taking a moment, pausing and looking at the journey and everything that you've went through and those decisions, like you said, those decisions that were made. And from there, it's really acknowledging and celebrating the strength that comes from making those decisions.
And then from that comes an added responsibility because you recognize your own courage and you acted in a courageous way by setting up this amazing goal for yourself. And then people around you and in Canada start recognizing that. And all of a sudden, you became a flag bearer for courage and a symbol of courage. How did that affect the way you place yourself in the world?
I still feel like sometimes I don't fit in because of that. You know, it's one thing to feel like you're courageous, and it's another for people to see that as well and to celebrate that with you. I'll be honest, I have moments where I think the complete opposite. Okay, well, you know, I am having a tough day. I can't get out of bed. I'm not strong enough to get out of bed. Yeah. So that is recognizing that there's more to it than just courage and bravery. And, you know, I think for me, it's just a matter of being able to, just be happy with that situation. And yeah.
Does it change also, you're a public persona now? Well, you are. I mean,
yeah.
You're in campaigns, and does that change also? Do you sometimes watch yourself in public, in a sense? Is it almost like having an agenda? These are the values that I'm putting forward, and these are the causes that are important to me.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. But that, it's interesting because that's changed so much over the years.
Yeah.
At first, it was about my story and my journey to the Paralympics and what I had to overcome in order to get to the Paralympics. And then between the two Paralympics, it was, you know, Michelle's going into this being a podium potential athlete. How can I inspire the younger generations and the new Paralympians that are looking to an above-the-knee amputee as, you know, someone that if they can do it, then I can do it, right? And now, as a retired athlete, well, what does that look like? Yeah. I wasn't really sure because everything was so sports related before. And now it's about, you know, being a person with a disability and being able to fully and genuinely love myself and to believe in my capabilities. I don't see myself as disabled, even though I use that word because that word is so widely recognized. I see myself as handicapable, not handicap.
Yeah.
Like I just don't really think that I am disabled. And then I'll do something and it'll like carry a heavy box and I'm falling every 2 seconds because my knee's just not made to carry heavy things. And I'm going to put in my place. But it's definitely changed the way that I see things. And I'm so grateful, so, so grateful for these opportunities and to be able to share my story. I think sometimes there's pressure that comes with maybe, like, especially the sports campaigns.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's different. Yeah.
Well, it's a new chapter for your
life
as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's exciting.
Have you found a new community through all that as well? Because it's not just athletes now. It's anybody
right.
who has
Yeah.
Will become something.
I'm getting there. It's been a year since I finally retired. And so, and then a year to almost 2 years since the games in March of 2018. And I spent the first year not really talking to anybody, very introverted, because I didn't know what my life was going to look like anymore. I spent 7 years defined by being an athlete. Everything revolved around this one sport. That's all I cared about. And then all of a sudden, I retired. And then I found out, you know, a month after I got back from the games, that my dad wasn't my biological father.
Wow. Okay.
So this portion of me that I always thought I was so proud to be, you know, Dutch, have a Dutch heritage. And then I'm like, what am I now? And, you know, that was a huge game changer for me, because now I'm not an athlete anymore. And now I'm not my, you know, I'll always be my father's daughter, but now there's somebody else in the mix. And there's a different part of me now. So it's been interesting figuring that out, who I truly am.
And there's probably never an answer to that.
No.
You know, which I think is interesting for people who have lived some one major difference, one something. It feels that their life is only about that, but your life is not only about the fact that you lost your leg and overcame that and made something out of it. There's much more to that.
For sure.
Obviously. Yeah. If people compare you to Terry Fox, what do you say to that?
Well, I actually love it, because Terry Fox, you know, he is one of my biggest inspirations because of, well, so many reasons, but just to name a few, he did it for the right reasons. He wasn't looking for fame by any means. He was doing it, you know, doing what he did to create awareness for cancer. He did that with the most basic knee out there, and he did it fighting all of the elements. Mm-hmm. And he's incredible. He did it until the very end, you know? And when I get in an elevator, which happened the other day, and, you know, kids are curious, and kids will always say something. They don't have a filter. And I love that.
Well, yeah.
That's their innocence and their openness.
Yeah.
And often parents will be like, oh, don't look. But then the odd parent will stop and be like, yeah, you know Terry Fox? You do that run every year.
Yeah.
It's like Terry Fox. And so I love that I'm able to be compared to Terry Fox. And actually, really cool story. My ex-husband was one of the first people to the hospital when I got into my accident.
Right.
My parents had called him because he was the closest. Everyone else had lived hours away. He had spent the first 2 days with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And when they found out, actually it was the day after my accident, they found out that they were going to amputate my leg.
Mm-hmm.
He had went home that night and he had taken everything out of his pocket. And there was a loony in his pocket that just happened to have a picture of Terry Fox.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out that exact day, June 28th, 31 years prior, Terry Fox had died. And the next day I went in for my amputation surgery. And while I was in there, and they were not just amputating the leg, but saving my life by severing off my femoral artery, they, you know, my family sat in comfort, because that was a sign.
Mm.
You know, Luke had brought this loony with him, and he said, this is a sign that Michelle's life as an amputee is going to have one of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty cool just to, you know, have that inspiration, because there's not a lot of, like, at that time, there wasn't a lot of people that were missing a limb that were really well known. Right?
So that's the thing that's changed in the past 30 years.
Yeah.
Is the visibility.
Right.
And even, I mean, I look at IFC, your leg, it's exposed right there, and there's drawings on it. Yeah. It's colorful. It's bright. It's a sign of pride.
Yeah.
As opposed to sort of the beige
right.
skin tone or whatever that people used to wear.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that is changing? You see it in the street. It's not just people that are visible that or famous.
And this is a good one for us to, a good conversation for us to have, because I'm guilty of wanting to be just like everyone else. When I first lost my leg, I was a fitness model. You know, I was all about the hair extensions and the 5-inch heels, and I just wanted to stand out for different reasons. I wanted to get attention. And when I got into my accident and I looked down at myself and I looked like a voodoo doll because I was covered in staples from them cutting me open everywhere and a gaping hole in my leg, missing 75% of my right leg, I just wanted to look like I used to, normal. And so my prosthetist comes in and we start, you know, figuring out how to build me a leg. And I'm like, I don't care what you do, make it look like my other leg. Make me look normal.
Right.
I don't want people to know that I'm an amputee.
Okay.
And I had a really bad hip flexion contracture. So there was no way to make me look like everyone else because my leg in itself looked very different. It didn't take me long to realize that that wasn't important by any means. It was about me getting back on 2 feet. So I started walking. And then I started showing my leg proud. And then I started cutting my pant leg.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, for me, I am so proud to be an amputee because not only did I survive my horrific accident, but I'm also able to get up and to continue to do the things I was doing before, plus more. It has given me the courage and the ability to venture out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest fear before my accident was public speaking, and I can speak to crowds or have spoke to crowds of 5,000 people. Like, it's completely changed me, this whole thing.
Yeah.
But the medal, I will never hide.
Yeah.
I would be doing myself no favors if I decided to hide it.
So do you remember that first day where you decided to wear shorts or a skirt and say, I'm going out on the street like this and everybody will see?
Yeah.
What does that feel like?
Well, I think for me, it was initially because I had a really bad limp. And people would always be like, oh, no, what did you do? Did you hurt yourself? I'm like, no, I have a prosthetic leg.
Yeah.
Like, oh. And every time their reaction was they felt bad for saying something. I'm like, well, why don't I just show it?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a part of me. I have an $80,000 knee that has given me the ability to do so much in my life. I'm going to show that off.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going to show off how proud I am to be out and about, still walking, still, you know, cycling, snowboarding, doing all these things. And so I don't know if it was necessarily a moment. It was just, you know, months and months of constantly being asked, what's wrong with you?
Right.
I'm like, well, I'm just going to show people what's wrong with me and how they don't need to feel sorry for me. Mm. Like, I'm happy. I'm rocking this.
Well, it's a technology piece, but it could be considered a fashion piece as well.
For sure, yeah.
Anyway, do you follow the technology aspect of it? Because there are great strides, pardon the pun, being made in that field.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really important to be on top of technology, especially if there's an opportunity for me to be a guinea pig.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for it.
Well, yeah.
I would love to, to know more about technology when it comes to prosthetics. There's certain technology that I'm not sure about, like when they integrate and put a pin into the femur and then you don't need the socket anymore. So, like, yeah, I'm all for it. And I think that it works really good for some people. There's just maybe others that I haven't wrapped my head around yet.
Things that are more around the junction of machine and human being.
Yeah. And it's pretty cool. It's really turned into, a lot of it's turned into like Terminator, right?
Yes.
And they're now doing transplants for hands. And it's truly incredible what the world is doing when it comes to not just prosthetics, but also, stem cell research and for people that are paralyzed. And it's a very exciting time to be alive.
That's wonderful. And so I'm asking questions about the leg because, Does that mean that do you have a selection of them that you use for various sports? And because you're very active, you do snowmobiling and you're, yeah, how does that work?
Yeah, so I have, I probably have about 5 or 6 legs.
Yeah.
So I have a running leg. I have a leg that I use for paddleboarding and surfing that's waterproof. And then I have a couple sports knees that have Fox mountain bike shocks in them that are specifically for my more high impact sports like snowmobiling, snowboarding, wake surfing. Mm-hmm. And then I have this fancy bionic computerized knee that I use for everyday walking as well as, you know, rock climbing, wall climbing, things like that. But yeah, it's pretty incredible. I think often you need more than one leg to do what you want to do because they're not always made for doing multiple sports, right? Like I would probably never run in this leg because it's computerized. I don't want to wear out the computer before the warranty or after the warranty is up. So, yeah.
And you're lucky to be visible and have access to, I guess, the right support and everything. Is that something that is common in your community? Do people have access to the right equipment, the right gear, or is it still problematic?
I'm really glad you're touching on this because this is a sensitive subject for me, but I'm more than happy to talk about it. When I lost my leg, I was granted $50,000 from my insurance company for a different knee that has since completely died on me. It cost, that leg at the time was, everything altogether was $100,000. So we had to fundraise for it.
Right.
And it was tough because without the insurance kicking in, I would be on a knee that was like a door hinge, very, very basic, right? Mm-hmm. The government, there's no regulation in the government, so every province is different. I was lucky to be in Alberta, which is one of the better provinces, but they don't fund these microprocessor knees. Mm. And so in order to have that best quality of life, I had to fundraise. And then 2 years ago, I was got up and put my leg on, and my knee wouldn't work anymore. Mm. So I just remember sitting at my table, crying, writing a Facebook post about how frustrated I was that there's really not much in Alberta. Waramps, which is great for kids under 18, and they also do quite a bit for adults too, but they won't fund an $80,000 knee, which is fine and makes sense, right? Because they have so many people to help. But where is the support? And, you know, it didn't take long, 3 hours after posting to Facebook for a veteran in the States to ask for my mailing address because he was sending me this knee.
Oh, my God.
I know. Truly amazing. Just incredibly lucky. But not everybody is so lucky. Not everybody has access to these microprocessor knees.
And that speaks to the power of community.
It does.
People who are, and people who suffer disabilities or have had accidents like you, is interesting because it's the kind of community that is not based on where they were born, what ethnic group or religious group or sexual orientation, none of these things, which are considered the basic building blocks of identity. For you, it's something happened.
Yeah.
And so it must be a very diverse community of people, all sorts of walks of life.
I love it. It's an incredible community to be a part of, for sure. You know, going to the Paralympics in both 2014, 2018, you got to meet a lot of different athletes. And throughout that time, different athletes came on the snowboard team and on other Canadian teams. And even just, I work for a mobility and accessibility company now. Right. I actually work with people that have these limitations and aren't able to walk. So it makes me really proud to be a part of a community that is so diverse. And everybody has a story. It's not, you're right. It's not about your nationality or anything like that. It's about your story. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened? How did you end up being in a wheelchair? How did you end up, you know, losing both your legs? Mm-hmm. And so it makes for some really cool conversations, and it can be emotional at times, but also very, very inspiring to be around people within the community.
And do you see yourself working in that field for years and years and years, or will there be a moment where you say, well, I'm closing this chapter of my life and I want to focus on something entirely different?
You know, we talk about purpose in our lives, and often a lot of people don't know what that purpose is. I think that mine was to just carry forward with being a Paralympian, mm-hmm. and maybe that purpose didn't really benefit anybody else except for myself, but I knew that was something that I needed to do mm-hmm. in order to shape who I was going to be outside of sport. Mm-hmm. This is 100% the industry that I've been working towards being in and that I should be in. I moved to a different province and really didn't know what my life was going to look like. And then I came across this job, and the second I walked out after being offered the position, I was like, this is it. This is my dream job. I've always wanted to be in healthcare.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to work with people within that community that we talked about. Mm-hmm. And now, and you know, I always love working in sales because I've been a realtor for 10 years.
I know.
So it lined up, the stars aligned, the universe was listening that day, and I think this is it. Like, this is my life job, where, you know, whether it be with this company or maybe moving into a role similar, but it's within this community.
Do you think what happened to you happened for a reason, or did you make that reason happen in a sense?
I think that you make that reason happen.
Yeah.
You can go both ways, right? Mm. You can either sit in, wallow in sorrow. How do I say this?
Yeah, self-pity.
You can either feel sorry for yourself,
right,
or you can make the best of your situation. And I just decided to make the best of my situation. I really feel like that was the strong person that we had talked about that I had failed to see. That person was just like, Kate, you need to do this. And sure, I had days where I maybe questioned if I wanted to do it, but yeah, I made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Did I make the decision to hit a guardrail going 120 kilometers an hour? No, that just happened.
Yeah.
And did I feel horrible for a long time that I made that wrong move that put me into the guardrail? For sure, I did. But I did make the choice to make the best of it.
It's a very powerful thing to say, and you give the impression of being, and you are, a very powerful woman, and it can be an unusual thing to be still in today's world, to be a powerful woman. Are people scared almost by your strength? How does that happen?
I don't know. I've had, you know, when I was in the dating scene, especially being an athlete, I've had guys tell me that it can be a bit intimidating.
Yeah.
And one ex, boyfriend at the time, that told me he wasn't a fan of being Michelle Salt's boyfriend.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really hit and miss. I try and surround myself with like-minded women
mm-hmm.
that are independent and love to celebrate success within the community of women, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, that being said, I don't only hang out with females. I'm a tomboy, so most of my friends are male.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know how to answer that question. I think that there is a bit of obligation there to always feel like you need to be strong for everyone, but that's not the case. Like, I have moments.
And you don't wake up in the morning saying, how will I be a role model today?
No, like I, and the thing is, I don't necessarily see myself as a role model. I'm just truly a person doing what I know how to do. That's what I believe. And if I can help someone along the way that is maybe going through something tough, then that's great. But there's been people that have helped me along the way when I was going through my tough time. So it's really just full circle. Right. We're all just here to help each other out. And I see a lot of toxic, negative conversations happening on social media. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. Why do we need to be jealous of each other? This isn't a competition. We're living our own lives. Let's just build each other up, especially women, because we can be so competitive. Let's just work really hard to enlighten each other and, you know, to be inspiring to each other.
So who inspires you then?
I think for me, you know, I touched a bit on Kaylee Humphreys. Yeah. She's been incredible, even though she's now competing for the States. but that doesn't change anything because I was able to witness how hard she worked for her sport and mm-hmm. for her country. She was also all for being the first female to compete with the guys.
Yeah.
Right? And mm-hmm. like that's amazing. Equality.
Yeah.
Why can't we do this? It shouldn't matter if we're male or female. Why can't we compete in the same discipline? So I love Kaylee, and she's helped me through some of my own stuff and truly an amazing person. I think another great example of that is Hayley Wickenheiser.
Yeah.
You know, one of the first athletes I met, I was so starstruck.
Yeah.
But she's incredible. She's so humble and, you know, look at her resume. She's worked so incredibly hard for everything she's accomplished, but yet she goes and she coaches the local team. Like she's amazing.
And, you know, these women athletes tend to have spectacular stories of courage and going through all sorts of adversity. And what's next in your story?
What's next in my story? Well, I'm still figuring out, again, who I am. And every day I get a little bit closer to learning about my biological father and who I've met numerous times. He just happens to be like 45 minutes from where I am. And I didn't know that moving to this place to outside of Kelowna, BC. So that and it's really cool to have opportunities like this one, you know, with Reitman's and these campaigns that I'm doing, because it allows me to be someone outside of an athlete. So I think I'd like to run with this. I don't know. I have a lot of ideas, things I want to accomplish, but for the meantime, I'm just trying to have fun. I'm trying to, you know, snowmobile in the backcountry and wake surf in the summer and just enjoy life with my new career and in my new province.
Self-discovery can be fun.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's a nice way to end our little conversation.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
No problem. Was that okay?
That was great.
Okay.